Thank you. And our final case this morning will be Good versus Tukwila School District.
Morning, Your Honors. My name is Richard Wooster. I'm here representing the appellant Jimmy Good. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
This is a case that is addressing a summary judgment order in a race discrimination case. It was brought asserting both hostile work environment and disparate treatment.
Counsel, let me ask you some questions. In this case, the trial court entered a rather lengthy summary judgment order. The summary judgment rule at Superior Court says that the order granting or denying the motion for summary judgment shall designate the documents and other evidence called to the attention of the trial court before the order on summary judgment was entered. My understanding of the record is that was not done here, correct?
It was, the record was later amended, and that was put in by stipulation of counsel.
But the order itself,
the order itself, the order itself did not.
Okay. And what happened, as I understand the record, is that it was a stipulation between counsel of those documents that counsel believed were before the trial court for purposes of summary judgment.
Correct.
Okay.
That
so
was
you're
signed off on by the court.
Well. Signed off on in what way?
We submitted the, that issue was not addressed in the briefing, and so my recollection of that specific fact is not crystal clear.
Okay. Let's assume for purposes of my question that you have a written stipulation between counsel, no input by the trial court as to what documents were before it, right?
Assuming for the purposes of your question.
Okay. So you're relying on your appeal for those documents that are the subject of the stipulation, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let me focus on the hostile work environment claim. Part of that claim, as I understand your briefing, is that the district superintendent, Burke, Athelda Burke, made a number of comments which are the basis of your hostile work environment claim, correct?
I would not say they are the sole basis of the hostile work environment claim, but those comments suggest direct evidence of racial animus.
Okay.
And
now,
so they helped form the backdrop.
I understand.
Out of which
well, let me ask the question, if you will.
Certainly.
Okay, I'll give you time. The record, as I understand it, does not contain any denial by the district that these comments were in fact made, right?
I think that is correct, but it was not admitted.
It wasn't admitted, but there's no denial I can find in the record that these comments were in fact made, right?
I believe that is correct, but the record in this case is a couple thousand pages long.
I understand.
And I apologize if I don't have
Not asking you to. Okay. With respect to those comments, what is your understanding of the district's position as to why those comments should not be considered for purposes of your hostile work environment claim?
My understanding is that those comments should not be considered because not all of them were made in Mr. Good's physical presence. Even though Mr. Good had awareness of that. They further argued that Mr. Good did not become aware of those comments until after he brought the litigation, which is not true.
Okay, with respect to the two answers that you just gave me, what's your response to those arguments by the district?
Okay, my arguments by the district are some of the comments, like giddy up, black man, do you folks need help filling out your surveys, were made at all staff meetings at which Mr. Good was present. When she referred to the athletic director as Joe Darkey, Mr. Good was with him. The district argues that that comment of Joe Darkey didn't offend Mr. Good when it was made because he didn't understand the significance of it, and later reports that it sickened him when he found out that that's what not only the superintendent but the human resources director used to refer to the athletic director as Joe Dark or Joe Darkey. And so Mr. Good was aware, and it was comments that were made by the highest individual within the district. And the Antonius case and the case cited National Railroad Corporation versus Morgan both said you look at the totality of the circumstances, and if discriminatory remarks are made to others, not necessarily to you, those can influence the hostile work environment, which is determined by the totality of the circumstances. And so you want to have these cases not dropped out on summary judgment, but heard in the moral suasive atmosphere of the trial courtroom, where the jurors can see these people and hear them and understand the impact of these remarks upon them. And so because she is the chief executive officer, and the comments were appalling and extensive. You know, Somalia students and their families are dirty. They shouldn't be here, causing students to march on the campus. That impacts the totality of the circumstances. I would urge the court to look at the Broyles versus Thurston County case, which is actually a gender discrimination case on hostile work environment. And that said, you know, poor assignments, failure to investigate, lack of communication supported the jury's verdict. Here we are at summary judgment, where all of the inferences need to be interpreted in favor of Mr. Good. There were numerous things where they failed to investigate. Picture of the President of the United States done up in blackface with monkey ears in a classroom that Mr. Good was assigned to teach in.
Let me ask you a question about that specific incident. It's unclear from your briefing whether that's a hostile work environment claim or a disparate treatment claim. Which is it?
It is a hostile work environment claim, not so much because of the picture in of itself, which was appalling, but the district's reaction when he brought it forward to the administrators to look into it, and they ignored it, as they ignored his request for a name-clearing hearing, as they ignored his request.
Could I ask you this? You have a disparate impact claim as well as hostile work environment. Briefly, what is it? I mean, is it based on the what is the adverse employment decision? The decision to not let him, to not rotate the chairmanship of the PE.
There are multiple disparate impact, and actually even the hostile work environment is a disparate impact. But the denial of the name clearing hearing, and disparate impact is when a member is treated less favorably than people who are not. So you have the denial of the name clearing hearing. He's being told to go guard the back door of the prom for the entire evening. He's not afforded training or counseling from the district's mentor supervisor. And in fact, this woman, not only because her job is to train mentors, she tells his mentee, stay away from him. Keep your distance. And she doesn't work with him. So that's difference in treating. He's not paid properly for coaching. And when he challenges it, rather than fix it, they fire him. And then he fights and he gets his job back and they fix the pay. There's excluded from participating in department actions, undeserved assessment of performance from the principal, even though it wasn't reduced to a written one. Absences from work were closely scrutinized. Excluded from the principal selection committee because he was allegedly close associates with Mr. Wright, and
it had nothing to do with who was chairman of the PE department.
That's part of it. That's part of, and I rattled.
Okay, you have your 2 minutes remaining.
Okay, thank you, Ron.
Good morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the court, Onika Gilliam on behalf of the Tukwila School District.
Let me ask you the same question.
Of course.
Procedural question. I take it that for purposes of this appeal, you're standing on the written stipulation between counsel as to what documents were before the court, notwithstanding the fact the court's order doesn't specify the documents.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. The listing in the initial page of the order does identify memoranda, declarations, et cetera, but does not specifically identify them, and the parties did stipulate. I did also want to point out, however, that the court also ordered the EEOC determination stricken from the record, and unfortunately, Mr. Good did reference the EEOC finding, despite the fact that it's not on appeal before the court today. So I would ask the court to respect the fact that that's been stricken from the record.
Go ahead.
I was just going to respond to some of the questions that you had asked of Mr. Good's attorney, but certainly if you have any questions, I'm sure you will feel free to ask me. With respect to the statements made by Ms. Athelda Burke and whether or not the district ever entered a denial, to be clear, this was on a summary judgment standard. The district was being very mindful of not disputing the statements that were alleged. However, what the district did do was ask that the entirety of all of the transcripts be reviewed from the prior litigation in the course of reviewing these isolated comments. And what Judge Darvis, I believe, saw was that these alleged statements of Superintendent Burke were actually founded on the same gossip and allegations and fabrications that form the basis for this lawsuit. What you have here is you have no comments being directed to Mr. Good at all.
Well, let me ask you.
You have comments, for instance, the Jay Dark, those comments you don't deny for the purposes of summary judgment that those were made.
I do not deny, Your Honor, that for the purposes of summary judgment, Mr. Good heard on one occasion Athelda Burke reference J.D. Hill as Jay Dark, and that he did not ask about it, and that he did not take offense to it because he did not know their relationship. He neither asked Mr. Hill about it, he never complained about it, and he admitted in his testimony, and that is referred at page CP, course record 268 to 269, the transcript, where he admitted he did not take offense to it. It cannot form the basis for a hostile work environment claim for one isolated conduct comment that you later belatedly, on the verge of filing EEOC complaints when you learn about it several years later, that you conclude that that was a hostile comment if
let
you did not perceive it as
Let me ask you this. What case do you rely on for the proposition that you just advanced?
That you must actually subjectively and objectively understand the comment to
that
be hostile.
That a comment made in your presence that arguably is racially offensive cannot form the basis for a violation of the Washington law against discrimination.
Let me restate that because perhaps
no,
I misheard it.
Yes, unless it's directed at you. Yes,
okay.
I am relying on Adams versus Able Building, which has a suggestion at page 298. That citation is 114 Appellate Reporter 291 at page 298, where the court suggests that discriminatory remarks must be made in the presence of the plaintiff.
That was done here, right?
It was made in the presence, but he took no offense to it.
It was made in his presence.
That's true.
Okay. So how does that case help you?
Well, to the extent that there is still the analysis, it was made in his presence. That's correct.
Okay.
So let me withdraw that being a support for that you must be the subject of it versus the presence. In Crownover, the court did say that the law requires some of the alleged act directed at the particular plaintiff to occur within the statute of limitation in order to be timely.
Okay, let me posit this. Let's have a situation where there are five people in a room.
Okay.
Somebody comes in and directs all racially offensive comments to one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
Under your theory, the other people in the room have no basis for claiming a violation of the Washington law against discrimination.
Your Honor, under Washington jurisprudence, and in fact, even under Ninth Circuit jurisprudence under McGinnis, I would argue that the plaintiff must have had at least one comment at some point also directed at them for which they were the
subject.
So
McGinnis, which is a Ninth Circuit case, and what
yes.
Whether the Washington...
McGinnis, Davis versus Fred, McGinnis, Crownover, and Adams, Your Honor, I believe would support the fact that the comment has to be directed to, you have to be the subject of at least one comment in order to proceed on a hostile work environment claim.
Why would that be the law?
Your Honor, because at this point I would argue that to establish a hostile work environment claim based on the perceptions of conduct between an alleged harasser and another party would not give you, as a real party in interest,
but
basis for pursuing.
Just as an example, there's five people in the room in a protected class. They're all women, or they're all African American, or whatever. Okay, so the supervisor or the employer comes in and says to one of them, you know, I just don't want you around anymore because, you know, your kind of people are dirty. And don't you think that it makes sense that that has impact on the other people who are in that same protected group?
I'm going to concede, Your Honor, that if pervasively women in this hypothetical environment or African Americans in this hypothetical environment are subjected to hearing in their presence comments that on their face are objectively and subjectively hostile, that could, under a different factual scenario than we have here today, give rise to perhaps the Court of Appeals extending the law on hostile work environment to hold that you cannot be the direct subject of a hostile comment to sustain a hostile work environment claim under the Washington law against discrimination.
What about the comment that, you know, about the people from Somalia, or what about the comment in the gym, do you people need help taking surveys?
I did want to comment on that because I do feel that there's some distortion of the record and what exactly Mr. Good testified to versus what counsel is arguing. Mr. Good testified to that he did not hear the giddy up black man comment. He did not hear any comment made at the all staff meeting. In fact, at CP 257, I was present for this event, although I did not hear what Ms. Burke said. So his presence at an all staff event of 350 staff, where even the subjects of the allegations themselves testified that they did not have discussions with Mr. Good about the subject of it, that certainly does not sustain his obligation to submit sufficient evidence that he has been subjected to a hostile work environment. While there is a litany of horrible comments that are alleged to have been made by Superintendent Burke, which the district does dispute, but for purposes of CR 56 did not, all of those comments, when on review of the transcript, what is revealed is that the Somalia statement was not made. That is hearsay. So what you have is hearsay on hearsay on hearsay on hearsay, and we stand here today where Mr. Good himself admits that he never heard anything offensive said by Superintendent Burke.
What was the first hearsay? Presumably the epithet, if uttered, was not uttered for the truth of its assertion, but was uttered as an epithet for some other reason. So what's the first level of hearsay?
Well, the
you just claimed there were like four levels, but I'm just interested in the first one.
Which comment are we talking about? Are we talking about the giddy up black man or
any comment? If I was to tell a member of the audience that I think they're an SOB, I'm really not talking for the truth of that one of their parents was a canine. I'm uttering the epithet for some other reason.
Well,
I don't even understand where there's a first level of hearsay.
The allegation from one of the plaintiffs in the other litigation was that she had heard from someone else that Ethelda Burke had said something. And while I understand that whether or not Ethelda Burke had said it may not be hearsay, the fact that it's an allegation that she had heard this, and then Mr. Good says he had heard that the other witness had heard, you've got several levels removed.
How about giddy up black man? Okay, he wasn't there when that was said. Somebody else told him that she said it.
He was present in a room of 350 people where he believes it was said, yes, but he did not hear it.
Oh, okay, he didn't hear it. But do you deny, or do your witnesses deny that it was said, or do you accept that it was said?
No, we deny that it was said, but we were not, and in fact, there was a dispute within the transcripts that were submitted whether or not that was heard by those witnesses themselves.
His declaration in response to summary judgment says that although he didn't initially hear the remark, there was a buzz in the room. I asked what was said, and I was offended that she had made that remark. Notwithstanding your citation to his deposition, we have this declaration in the record that says otherwise.
Well, even if, Your Honor, even if that one statement is in fact what was heard, I would still assert that it does not give rise to a hostile work environment, given the several years between his employment and the lack of any actual impact on his employment, the terms or conditions, or any adverse actions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Harris versus Forklift, which again was a gender discrimination case, points out that whether harassment is sufficiently severe or pervasive is a question of fact. In evaluating a hostile work environment claim, we look at all of the circumstances, including the frequency of the discriminatory conduct, its severity, whether it's physically threatening or humiliating or mere offensive utterance, and whether occasionally it interferes with the employee's work. And also, the court in Harris looked at the conduct of the president toward other employees as being highly relevant in the creation of a hostile work environment claim. So those comments that were made, and there were numerous. Also, we have the issue of the weight room. His request for repairs in the weight room went unanswered. Finally, a piece of equipment failed and he broke his hip. Only after the weight room was refurbished was the white employee required to teach there, the same white employee that he was precluded from being able to mentor, that he didn't receive any trainings as being a mentor on. If the court affirms this summary judgment on this record, the bar for a hostile work environment claim will be insurmountable going forward, because there are so many elements in both the hostile work environment on this case as well as the disparate treatment. And this needs to be tried in a courtroom where the witnesses can see the people, or the jurors can see the people on the witness stand and hear their testimony, the inflection in their voice, how they respond to cross-examination. This case should be remanded for trial. The issue on the EEOC was cited simply because defendants had the temerity to say we should be sanctioned for bringing this appeal.
Thank you.
And we had a good faith basis.
Thank you. The court will be at recess.
All right. Thank you.